This week's Sedra, Parshas Korach, brought to you by the Weinbach family of Ramat Beit Shemesh. Liuli Nishmas, Yaakov Yitzhak Ben Chaim. Rashi, at the beginning of this Parsha, tells us, Bishvil Shahaya Shevet Ruvein Sharui B'chayinaisam Teimana. Since the tribe of Reuven, they encamped on the south side, Shachin Likahas Ubana Vachonim Teimana. So they were neighboring Kahas, of the family of Levi, that they were also on the south side. Because of that, they were neighbors. So Nishtatfu Im Korach B'Machluk. So as a result, they ended up being neighbors with them and the Machlokas with Korach, right? Since Korach came from Kahas, and Reuven, the tribe of Reuven, was bordering with Kahas, so they got sucked into the Machlokas of Korach. As Rashi concludes, Oy le Rasha, Oy le Sheino, as we said. Woe to the Rasha, woe to his neighbor. Like they say, the joke, there's once Bacher was learning Gemara, came across the Tosfos and he couldn't understand it. He's going over and over and over, couldn't understand. He says, this can't be right. He says, this is a mistake in his Tosfos, doesn't make sense, something wrong here. So he does what one should not do. He rips the page out of the Gemara, right, makes it a ball, throws it away. He says, no good. So his friend's watching him. He says, what are you doing? He says, oh, this makes no sense over here, forget it. He says, yeah, but what about the Tosfos on the other side of the page? He says, Oy le Rasha, Oy le Sheino. So, too, the Reuven, since they were next to Kahas, they, Oy le Rasha, Oy le Sheino, they were sucked into the Machloikas of Korach and were punished accordingly. Rav Aaron Leib Steinman Shlita, he asked the following question. Kasha. He says, I can understand if, you know, the tribes can choose where they want to, you know, where they want to go, where they want to camp out. And, you know, Reuven, they shouldn't have camped out next to, you know, Kahas, when they have people like Korach over there. And because they, you know, made that bad decision, so therefore they're punished accordingly, you know, and they got brought into the Machloikas and they got punished. It makes sense. You know, there might like it was Sodom and Lot. You know, Lot chose to settle in Sodom, knowing that it's a bad place. Okay, but over here he says the encampment of Klal Yisrael was not a choice. Reuven didn't have a choice to stay where they were. They're Hashem, without Pi Hashem. Hashem said this tribe has to be here. This tribe has to be here. So what do you want from Reuven? You know, why should they be punished that they got, you know, sucked into the machlokes with Korach when it was not their fault? Right, they didn't choose to be there. They had to be there. So I was thinking of answering this question based on an idea that Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, that's all, the Mir Rashiva, brings out in Sichas Musar. Start with the Gemara in Baba Kama. Gemara says over there in Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, the story of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was already an old man, and Gemara relates he was very old. And he had these very, very big, heavy eyebrows, right? His eyebrows are very big and heavy, and they covered his eyes. So he couldn't see. That's how big his eyebrows were. So once he was sitting there at Talmidim, whatever, and Rav Kahana was there, and he wanted to see Rav Kahana. So he turned to his Talmidim, and he says, lift up my eyebrows. You know, I want to see Rav Kahana, so please lift up my eyebrows. Because he was old, he couldn't do it himself. So they went over to him and they lifted up his eyebrows so he can catch a glimpse of Rav Kahana. Now, Rav Kahana, he had just recently hurt his lips. Right? Something hit his lip or whatever, and his lip was cut. So as a result, he had you know, he had to, he kept his like mouth open or whatever, you know, because of his, the pain from his lip. So it looked always like he was smiling, but he wasn't really. He's just, you know, because of the cut, so he had to keep his like mouth open. But it looks from the outside like he's smiling. So Rabbi Yochanan, when he lifted up his eyebrow, he looked at Rav Kahana. He looked like Rav Kahana was smiling, like laughing at him. That's what he thought. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan says, "Oh, what? He's laughing at me, you know, because of my big bushy eyebrows. You know, he thinks it's funny, you know." So he was hurt. He was hurt that, you know, Rav Kahana was laughing at him. Well, he really wasn't, right? But he didn't realize, and he thought he was, and he felt bad. And because of that, because Rav Kahana slighted, made the, you know, hurt Rabbi Yochanan's feelings, so what happened? He died. The Gemara says. After that, Rabbi Yochanan later on revived him, brought him back to life, whatever, but he died. So the question is obvious, asked Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. What did Rav Kahana do to deserve to die? Right? Well, he hurt his feeling. He didn't mean to hurt his feelings. He had a cut lip. He was standing like this. He didn't mean it. And he happens to be there. Rabbi Yochanan misunderstood and thought he was laughing at him when he really wasn't. And okay, he thought he hurt his feelings, but he didn't do anything wrong. He just had a cut lip, that's all. So well, why should he die because of that? He should be punished. What did he do wrong? So says Rav Chaim, from here we see a big yisod. And that is that when it comes to hurting somebody else's feelings, it's not when a person gets, so to speak, punished for it, it's not a punishment. It's when a person gets affected and he gets, you know, he gets punished, but it's not as a revenge because he did this bad to him, so now he deserves to have it back happening to him. He says it's just a natural result. It's like the ruchniyistik in nature. He gives the example, and nafkamina being, in other words, that even if a person didn't mean to do it, it doesn't matter because it's an automatic reaction, right? You hurt somebody else's feelings, you get hurt. You get hurt. Why? That's how Hashem created the world. Meaning, you meant it, you didn't mean it, it has nothing to do with it. He gives the mashal. He says, like putting your hand in fire. Right? A person accidentally, you know, puts his hand on the, I don't know, the element, whatever, he doesn't realize it's red hot, and he touches it. Now, if he didn't mean to touch it, he didn't know it was hot, and no, for sure if he would have known, he would never put his hand there, but he put it in. Is it gonna hurt? Is it gonna burn himself? Why? He didn't mean to. Nothing to do with it. Mean to, not mean to. You put your hand in fire, you get burned. It had nothing to do with meaning, right? So too, he says, when you hurt somebody's feelings, you get burnt. If that's how Hashem created the world. Meaning, nafka mean, like we said, meaning, but I didn't mean to. I didn't want to hurt his feelings. It doesn't matter. It's like you're putting your hand in fire, you get burnt. You hurt somebody's feelings, you get burnt. But Mele, now the Gemara is clear. Right? Rav Kahana hurt Rabbi Yochanan's feelings. Did he mean to do it? Of course not. He was just standing there with his hurt lip. They didn't mean to do it. Doesn't matter. Since a person's feelings was hurt because of you, whether you meant it or not, it's like putting your hand in fire, you get burnt. Brings another interesting Gemara, which we see the same Yesod. There was a Samora Rav Rechumi, and he used to go away and to learn. He traveled, and he went away to learn for a whole year, and he would come back only on Erev Yom Kippur to be with his wife. And every year of Yom Kippur, you know, his wife was waiting for him to return, and he'd go away again for another year. So one year, he was getting involved in the sugi a little bit too much, and he lost track of time, and he didn't, you know, start his way back home, you know, to be back on time on Erev Yom Kippur. And his wife's expecting him, you know, first thing in the, whatever, in the morning, whatever, she's waiting, and he's not coming. You know, so she started getting nervous. You know, where is he? He always comes to Erev Yom Kippur, morning, whatever, and now it's afternoon, he's still not here. She's looking at her watch, it's getting later, and still no sign of her husband. So the Gemara said she was so upset, you know, because she knew where her husband was, that she shed a tear. Started crying, and a tear came down. So because of that, where her husband, Rabbi Yochumi, was, where he was studying, there he was on some balcony or whatever, it cracked open, he fell down and he died. Okay? In other words, Pashtus, that the Gemara is telling us, he was punished for hurting his wife's feelings. Okay? So says Rav Chaim, an interesting chap. He says, if the whole idea, you know, of when you hurt somebody's feelings, you get punished, right, is to get even, you know, okay, you did this to him, so now you're going to get it back, right, to get even with the person. He says, if this woman She shed a tear because her husband was late. How many tears do you think she's going to shed when her husband's dead? Right? She wanted to get even with him? No. She didn't want him to. She wanted him to die. She was upset. She was a little bit late. Surely if he's dead. So if it's to, you know, to make the, you know, balance the scales and to get back what he gave him, you know, he deserves it because look what he did to her. So she now she has to get back there, and then Hashem has to, you know, but that's not making her, that's not balancing the scales. She doesn't want that to happen. So he said, Echanamek, we said, it's not because of that. If you hurt somebody's feelings, that's the nature, you get burnt. Put your hand in fire, you know what? Does she want that to happen? Of course she doesn't want that, but it doesn't matter. She doesn't want it, he doesn't want it, but he somehow hurt her feelings. Burnt, he gets hurt. In this case, he died also. Same Yusuf. So therefore, I was thinking, possible to answer the question we had before, Rav Steinman, why? What do you want from Shevet Reuven? Why should they be affected and get punished or everything with Korach because they were, you know, next to them? Or Leras or Lashchino? We ask, not their fault. Right, Hashem put them there at the south side. You know, they didn't choose to go. They picked a bad area to go to. Hashem put them there. So what do you want from them? Why should they get punished? They got, you know, brought into the machloikas. They're not their fault. According to what we're saying, could be that it's not their fault. But they were pogay in Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, they were trying to win against Moshe Rabbeinu. So you go against the human being. You mean to? You don't mean to? You're putting your hand in fire. You get burnt. Nothing to do. What can you do? Not their fault. We're not saying it was their fault necessarily. They had to go there, but you hurt a person. That's it. That's the natural result that you get burnt. We see this seriousness of hurting somebody's feelings. The following story: there was once a class in the classroom, and one of the boys in the class he was mentally slow, a little slow. So, as is unfortunately the case sometimes, the other boys, you know, he was a target of the other boys, you know, they started making fun of him always, and this, and, you know, because he's the slow, kid that's a little slow. So they started, you know, making fun of him, crack jokes, and embarrass him, whatever. And so, what happened? It started out to be a joke, but it ended up to be not a joke at all. Because he was hurt so badly, you know, and of course it hurt his feelings tremendously, and it made such an impression on him that eventually this boy started out to be a little bit slow and slightly mentally thing. He went totally crazy, and to this extent that they had to put him away into a mental institution. Now these boys in the class, after this happened, they realized what they had done. I mean, can you imagine? This guy, okay, he's a little bit slow, but he can, you know, function in society. Now that's it. And the doctor said that he would need a nace, and I'll pee, derech ha-teva, that's it, he's in for life. He's gone broke, and that's it. He's, you know, he'll never get better. Pee teva. And the boys realized what they did. He said, you know, we're joking around, and we heard his feelings, okay, but we caused him, you know, ruined his life. Mamish. So, they went to Rav Eliashiv Shlita, and they asked him, what do we do? What can we do? What do we do? So it's like, okay, you know, now you ask what you can do. You know? There's a Maisa with the Agav, before we get back to that. There's a Maisa with the Brisker Rav. Once this person did something, I'm not going through the whole story, but he did something also that was not right and, you know, got to a big mess. So the Brisker Rav gave him the following analogy, you know, what it's like. Because the guy also wanted to know, what to do? What can I do now? What should we do? So he says, there was once a rich man that he, unfortunately, you know, lost his money. You know, bad investments, whatever it might be, he lost his money. And now he is like a, you know, regular, simple person, and he needed a parnassa. So the little money he had left, he decided he was going to buy a couple of horses and wagon and be like a balagala, like a wagon driver, you know, a taxi driver, if you will. So that's what he did. He went out, bought his horse, whatever. In the meantime, the other balagalas, you know, in the area, they said, oh, that's not right. You know, it's Hasaga school. You know, he's coming in, taking away our business. You know, every extra taxi driver means less business, you know. So they got together, you know, the union of Balagalas, and they had a meeting, and they said, you know, what should we do over here? It's not right. He's saying, So the old eldest of the group, he said, "Don't worry, let me take care of it. I'll take care of it." I said, "Okay, wonderful." So he goes to this guy that used to be a rich man, and he starts schmoozing with him. He says, "I understand that you decided to become a balagala." And he says, "Yeah, yeah, bought myself horses." And that. He says, "Well, you know, as you know, I'm a veteran, you know, driver, and so I, you know, I just want to ask you, do you realize what you're getting yourself into?" So he says, "I don't know, I think so. You know, what's the big deal? You know, take people here, or there, whatever." What? He says, no. "Do you realize the responsibility that you're taking on yourself?" So he says, "What responsibility?" "Okay, I take people." Yeah. He says, no. He says, "You don't understand. So let me give you an example." He says, "Let's say you're driving nighttime, taking, you know, family, whatever, in your agala, and you're going through the woods, the forest, whatever, and you didn't see, and there's this big mud, you know, thing of mud. And you get stuck in the mud. Here you are. It's dark outside. You're in the middle of the forest. You have a family in their back, you know, with your agala. And there's wild animals around and robbers and this. And you're, you know." He says, "Do you want that responsibility on your back? You know, what's going to be this family you're taking and their kids or whatever? Do you want that responsibility?" He said. So the guy says, "Yeah, truth to that doesn't scare me so much." He says, "Why?" He says, "Listen, if I get stuck in the mud, well, let's take my stick, hit the horses really hard, until they get out of the mud." So the guy says, the old man says, "Okay." He says, "But let's say it's a deep, deep mud thing. You know, it's not that you're going to hit your horse again. You hit it, the horses can't get the maggot out. Then what are you going to do?" So he says, "Still, I'm not so worried, because I'm, Baruch Hashem, a strong, healthy guy. I'll just get out and push with my horses. My horse will push, I'll push, and we'll get the agala out." So he says, "Okay, but let's say it's even deeper than that. The agala gets really deep, so you and your horses can't get out the agala. Then what are you going to do?" He says, "Still, you know what I do? I tell the people in the agala to get out, you know, make it lighter, and then my horses, myself, and all the people in the agala, everybody will push the empty agala, and then we'll get it out of the mud." So he wasn't, you know, getting anywhere. He says, "Okay, but let's say it's really, really deep, really deep mud, and you and your horses and the people and everybody pushing it out is not going to get the agala out. Then what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You want that achrayus?" Ah, so now the man was stumped. He said, I don't know. So he said, "No, what would you do now? What are you going to do in such a situation?" He says, "I don't know. Now you got me. I don't know what I do. So tell me, what would you do? What would you do in a situation?" She says, "You want me to tell you? I'll tell you. But only under one condition. I'll only tell you," the old man says, "if you promise that you're not going to be a balagala. You promise you're not going to go into the business, I'll tell you." So he thought to himself, you know, truth is, he had his good point there, you know, the big responsibility, and I'm dying to find out the answer to this question, you know. So he goes, "Fine, okay, I won't be a balagala. Tell me, what do you do in such a situation?" So he makes sure, one second, signed his paper, you know, agreement, you're not going to be a balagala. Okay, signs it, goes, "Okay, tell me, what would you do in such a situation?" So the old man says, "You know what I'd do?" He says, "What?" He says, "Absolutely nothing. Nothing you can do." He says, "However, a good balagala doesn't get himself into a situation like that." So Brisker Rose telling this guy, "Yeah, are you okay now after the fact? Oh, what do we do? You're right. Sometimes you get yourself into a mess, into the mud, and there's no way out. There's no way out. But you should have used your head, you know, not to get into that mess to begin with. That's the kunz, not after." So, anyways, back to our story over here. And so the classmate, they asked Rav Yoshua, "What do we do now? You know, we made this guy crazy and mamish and it's a terrible situation. What should we do?" So Rav Yoshua said to them, "The only thing you can do right now is wait for till May of Esrim, till 120, till this boy that you made crazy dies, and then you have to go to his kever." And with 10 people, if there's 10 of you or whatever, and ask for his mechila. So they feel, well, you know, that's, you know, we have to wait, because it's terrible. It means they have to live their whole lives with this guilt. You know, at least if they can go and as mechila and finish, you know, make them, you know, take it up. But no, they have to live with it in this conscience. They're all the whole until, you know, who knows how many years until this guy dies, so they can go to his kever. But they said, no, that's what you have to do. Interesting enough, though, they asked Rabbi Yashiv, what's the logic to that, though? In other words, they can't ask mechila for him now. They have to wait till he dies. He says, is a dead person better than a live person? In other words, you're saying, okay, but he's retarded or whatever, you know, he's not. Okay, but that's worse than dead? You have to wait till he's dead to ask mechila? Okay, it's true, he's not normal, but it's still, isn't a live person not normal better than dead? At least he's not dead. Why wait till he's dead to ask him for mechila? Why not at least ask him now? So he says, no, it's different. He says, because a person's neshama, okay, when it's in, it's trapped in the goof, so you got to deal with this neshama through the goof, and if the goof's not a bardas, or he doesn't have seichel, whatever, so you can't, he can't give you mechila. He does not, you know, not a bardas, be able to give you mechila. So you can't get, you know, you can't get through the neshama because it's trapped in this goof, and this goof doesn't have das, and you can't get the mechila. After he's nifter, so then the neshama leaves the goof. So now the neshama is away from the goof. Now you can get your mechila. So you have to wait until 120. Reminds you of a similar story. Of a Rebbe this time. There was a Rebbe, and he was not a very good Rebbe, obviously. And he got on a case of one of the kids in the class, and he constantly, you know, embarrassed him, and etc. etc. And he also really hurt his feelings terribly, and ruined his life. To such a degree that it affected, it scarred him, you know, mentally. And he was able to function and everything, but he ended up never getting married even. Because he wasn't able to, you know, function totally and to be able to start a family, whatever, because of what that, you know, Rebbe did at school. Anyways, this Rebbe happened to be schmoozing with some of the classmates, and many years later, you know, and they were, you know, talking about the good old days or whatever, and wanted to mention about this boy that this Rebbe, you know, caused so much sorrows to. And they said, you know, we think that he's not doing so well. He never ended up getting married. He's like over 40 now. And the Rebbe said, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't realize, like, I really, you know, it's because of me, I felt terrible. So he said, I better ask him for mechila. So he finds out where this guy lives now. Again, he's in his 40s now. He goes to this former Talmud of his, and he says, you remember me? I used to be your Rebbe. And he says, of course I remember you. With not a very happy look on his face. And he says, yes, you know, I remember, you know, I caused you tzaras. He goes, you better believe it, he caused me tzaras. He says, you know, I never forgave you for that. You realize that because the matzav I'm in is all because of you, and because you mama. And he says, you ruined my life. And the Rebbe fell. Oh, you can imagine how the Rebbe fell. The Rebbe starts crying and says, okay, please, believe me, moichel me, I'm sorry, please, moichel me. So he says, how can I be moichel you? I can't be moichel you. You ditched me because of you, I'm not married and this and that, and you ruined my life, and how can I be moichel you? Anyways, the Rebbe kept begging and begging and crying and begging, please, please, be moichel me, moichel me. So finally, the Talmid says, okay, I'll tell you what. I'll be moichel you under one condition. He says, you embarrass me in front of the whole class. If you get the whole class together, you know, and in front of everybody, ask mechila from me in front of everybody, you know, since you did it in front of everybody, I want you to, you know, ask mechila from everybody, then I'll be moichel you. So he says, oh, yeah, good, bro. And we saw light at the end of the tunnel, you know, okay, at least you can get mechila over here. So he says, oh, Baruch Hashem. So he leaves, he goes to the school office, and he looks up, you know, the class of whatever it was, and sees who all the boys were in the class at the time. Anyway, he starts making some investigations, and he sees, not so posh, not like everybody's living next door to each other. Okay, let's get everybody together, and have mechila, you know, no problem. Yeah, these people, one living in America, one's living in Europe, one's, you know, this is like many years ago, they're all married with family, and I mean, they're all over the place. So he made a cheshbon that if he's going to bring all these guys in, you know, to here to one place to ask this boy, this man mechila now, it's going to cost him more than $20,000 in plane fares and this, whatever. 20,000, more than 20,000 though. Anyways, then what am I going to do? So he asked one of the Gdolim, Shiloh, he says, what should I do? I heard this good thing, and he told him the whole story, but he's willing to mochel me if I, but it's going to cost me 20,000 bucks. What should I do? So the Rav told him, let's say that didn't happen. Let's say you were driving your car one day, and accidentally you, chas v'shalom, you hit a kid or whatever, you ran him over and you killed him. Chas v'shalom. Okay? And because of that, obviously the family was not so happy. And they took you to court, and, you know, you weren't paying attention, you were driving, you're whatever, you're reckless, you know, and as things stand, it looks like you're going to have to sit in jail for a number of years, is what you did. Now, wouldn't you pay $20,000 for a good lawyer to get you out of this, a situation like that? Yeah, I don't want to sit in jail for 10 years. Of course, I'd pay a lawyer to get me out of it, right? So he says, no, it's no different. You pay $20,000 to get out of this, so you shouldn't spend some years in jail. Certainly, you should spend $20,000. You shouldn't spend your eternity in Gehenna. Right, it's okay. It's expensive, but you pay a lawyer that, so pay to get out of this situation. So I don't know exactly what he did in the end, but we see the seriousness of being pogeya with somebody. Therefore, conclude with the positive side, the example of what it means to be careful of somebody else's feelings. Cute Maisa with Rav Shach Zatzal. Rav Shach, when he was a young man, so he was discussing this Gemara, whatever, Tosfos, with a Chavrusa, and Rav Shach came up with this nice, what he felt was a nice Chiddush Svara, you know. So he presented it to his Chavar friend, and he says, look, listen to this Svara I came up with, whatever, and he said, I don't like it. That's not good. And he asked the Kasha on it. He answered the Kasha back and forth. So they couldn't come to agreement. Rav Shach thought he had a nice shot, nice svara, and the Chavrusa disagreed, says not. So they said, okay, let's settle this. Let's go to Rav Chaim Moser Grudzinski. And let him, whatever he says, we'll see if he likes it. Not. Fine. So they go to Rav Chaim Moser, they say, Rav Shach says, I have this svara, can you please listen, tell me, yes, no, what's the story? So tells him the whole svara, etc., and the other guy's saying why he didn't like the svara, and this back and forth. So Rav Chaim Moser hears everything, and he goes to his bookshelf, and he pulls out a sefer called Bris Avraham. How many of you have heard that sefer? Nobody. Okay, it's not a very common sefer. It's some old Achron, not a known sefer. He pulls it out and he opens it up, points to it, and he says, right here. And they read it, exactly Rav Shach's Svara. So this early Achron, right? Mamish came with the exact same Svara as Rav Shach. So he saw he was right. Good. Baruch Hashem. So, when left happily, Rav Shach said years later, he was learning Baba Metzia, Hamafkir, or whatever, and he was going through Rabbi Kiva Eger, Chiddush Rabbi Kiva Eger on the Sugya. He's going through Rabbi Kiva Eger, and he says, believe it. He sees the exact svara again that he came up with. Rabbi Kiva Eger says it right there on the mafki. So then he started thinking, he says, wait a minute. He says, what's going on? He says, something doesn't make sense here. He says, I remember when I asked Rabbi Chaim Moser this, I mentioned svara, I want to know if it's good or not. He went and he pulled out this sefer Bris Avraham, nobody ever heard of, and he showed me that he has this svara. He says, why didn't he show me Rabbi Kiva Eger? I mean, Rav Chaim Moser knew Rabbi Kiva Eger the back of his hand. I mean, he knew every single Rabbi Kiva Eger back and forth, okay? Not Shaykh, he didn't know it. For sure he knew it. So why would he go to some far-off sefer, Bris Avraham, instead of showing me the Farish Rabbi Kiva Eger? So then it hit Rav Shach. He says, now I understand. He said, here I came with this svara, whatever. Rav Chaim Moser right away knew, this is the Beferish Rabbi Kiva Eger, and Hamafki, not some Gemara Menachos or something, Hamafki. Rav Chaim Moser knew that, of course, but he knew, therefore, if he was going to show me, and open up Rabbi Kiva Eger and show me, then I'd be embarrassed. How could a yeshiva bacher not know Rabbi Kiva Eger on the Sugya, on Hamafki? You know, and I would be very embarrassed that here I come up with my, you know, shot, you know, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says it right here in a mafkid, and I didn't know that. So in order not to hurt my feelings, he knew, being an encyclopedia that he was, that this Bris Avram happens to have saved that same svar. And he knew if he would show me that, he wouldn't hurt my feelings. Because what? I wasn't expecting what every Bachar knows what the Bris Avram said. Of course not. So therefore, it didn't hurt my feelings when I saw the Bris Avram said it, because I didn't know who he was anyways, right? But if he would have shown me Rabbi Akiva Eiger, then that would have hurt my feelings. And therefore, in order to not hurt my feelings, he pulled out this other sefer instead. So I was thinking of adding to that, Lechora. We could also, what about the other guy? It's even worse. He was even arguing with the svar, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says. So Rishama not for his feelings also, he pulled out this other thing. Anyways, that shows, you know, thinking, you know, careful not to hurt the other person. Let's conclude with one short other maysa along the same lines with Rabbi Akiva Eiger, talking about Rabbi Akiva Eiger. So when he was younger, so he was single, so there was, it was an age, you know, to shidduch age, and there were, you know, looking for shidduch for him, etc. So of course there's a lot of people were interested, and there was this family from Lisa, this area, and they wanted to consider him, but they decided that they're going to send two talmidei chachamim from the Azor, from the area over there, to test them, you know, make sure he's what they heard good things, they want to make sure. Fine. So Rabbi Akiva was sitting in the Beis Medrash learning, and these two Talmidei Chachamim come up to him. He says, "Do you mind if we speak to you?" So he says, "Sure." So one of them brings a kasha, you know, we have a kasha, da da da, and he brings it. So Rabbi Akiva Agus looks at him and shakes his, you know, shrugs his shoulders and just, "I don't know." He says, no, what about this, this, this? He goes, I don't know. So then the other guy starts, "Well, how about this kasha and the Gemara here? No, whatever, back and forth. Rabbi Akiva is like, "Don't know." Shrugging his shoulder again. Akiva doesn't know what for. Anyways, they try this, try that. He doesn't answer. So they left him. They go back to their potential, you know, father-in-law. He says, "Hey, you know, you're a very lucky man. It's a good thing you sent us. Because this guy doesn't know anything." And we're asking him this question, and, you know, it's nothing. He didn't have what to say about anything. You know, it's a good thing you sent us. You know, as we see, it was not worth his, what the, obviously these rumors about him are false, whatever. Okay. Meanwhile, during this whole test, Rabbi Yeager's uncle was watching this. So after these guys left, he went up to him, his nephew, and he says, "Okay, what's going on over here?" I saw them asking this question. "What are you shrugging your shoulders?" You could probably, you know, answer these things, you know, what's going on? Why did you just pretend, you know, and this was for a shidduch? You knew this, you know, a potential shidduch. So he says, "Yeah, I knew it was for a shidduch. So why didn't you say something? Why don't you answer?" He said, "I'll tell you. The first guy asked me this kasha, right? The answer was Beferishatosvus. So, I felt uncomfortable. I'm going to tell him Beferishatosvus. You know, I embarrassed the guy. He didn't know Tosvus. The second guy is even worse, right? He asked me his other great kasha in quotation mark, and the Pharisee Gemara, the answer to the question. I'm going to tell him, that's a Gemara there. The guy's going to feel like nothing, you know? I'll tell him, he overlooked the Pharisee Gemara. Yeah. So I didn't tell him because I didn't want to hurt their feelings. So it's unbelievable. He said, "What, you know, first is your shidduch." He says, "Okay, I'm not really shidduch, no shidduch, important, that's very true, but I'm not going to hurt somebody's feelings because of it. It's not worth it. I'd rather be considered like, embarrass myself, feel like a nobody, you know, whatever, and lose a shidduch and everything, but not to hurt somebody's feelings." And like we saw at the beginning tonight, that it's hurting somebody's feelings. We said, you didn't mean well, you this or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like putting your hand in fire. It has terrible, terrible repercussions. Therefore, we have to take this to heart. Remember, in our dealings, ben adam l'chavero, with our friends, and pay attention to this issue, inyan, when we're, you know, how to deal with people, talk to people, make sure that we don't, you know, step on their toes, so to speak, hurt them, hurt their feelings. As we said, you know, it's not a matter of even, okay, getting it punished. Even if you don't even do it without meaning, you didn't mean to, it was an act or whatever, it's putting your hands in fire. So we have to be extra, extra careful. And if we put in our efforts and try our best, then, Bezat Hashem, Hashem should help us in this inyan, stay free from being pogea in our friends, and Bezrat Hashem, we should be zoicha to the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, b'mehira b'yameinu.